This is a production of Cornell University.
All right, so we'll just get started here. Call the meeting to order. Welcome back from spring break. I hope everybody got the well-deserved time off they needed. A little rest and relaxation before the final stretch of the year. And with that, we will move to the roll call.
Abir El-Samari. Chris Anklin. Samuel Bresani. Kate Carter-Kranz.
Here.
Charles Day. Jordan Dossel. Tony Duell. Ruth Epstein.
Here.
Natalie Gonzalez. Sabrina Graham.
Here.
Bridget Hayes. Amara Natale. Kyle Carnuda. Alexandria Tiusova.
Here.
Genesis Lee.
Here.
Stephanie Lopez. Delia Matthews.
Here.
Parshad Mehta. Marina Minnelli.
Here.
Neve Moore.
Here.
Andrew Bertha.
Here.
Chris O'Connor.
Here.
Christine Oinewa. Akash Patel.
Here.
Nori Ellis Perez. Damian Sharp.
Here.
Georgia Smith.
Here.
Jack Simmons. William Wang.
Meeting managers.
Josh Washington.
Non-meeting.
Anna Wunsch.
Here.
And Simon Yang.
Here.
We have 16 out of 32 seated body members.
So what are we, one short or
one
short?
Okay. We'll come back to that if we get somebody else. We can move on to our first presentation. Let me get this pulled up here. Did you have anything that you needed up on the... Okay. All right. So our first presentation, we have Nayara from the Advocacy Center, and I will give the floor to you.
Oh, thank you. Where shall I stand? I don't have too much to do. Shall I go over there?
You're more than welcome to go over there, yeah.
Okay, well, hello everyone. My name is Nara. I use they and he pronouns. I'm so excited to be here with you all for many, many reasons. But I am a campus educator for the Advocacy Center. Has anyone here heard of the Advocacy Center? Okay, that's awesome. Basically, why I'm here. With their family who the dynamic has changed, and it's quickly become a domestic violence situation or abuse situation, right? So we can help coordinate, you know, alternative housing, figure those things out. Sometimes we even hear of people who come with folks who are going to grad school, but they are like their partner or something like that, and then they want alternative housing, and of course the university can't house people that aren't students, but we can coordinate folks with schools to find alternative housing. We can also help with transportation, those sorts of things. And when it comes to reducing trauma, that's really about the way that survivors often, regardless of if they want to or if they need to, must interact with systems. So systems like the medical system, systems like the Title IX system, or orders of protection, or legal proceedings, right? All of those big systems are things that we can navigate, and we have many, many advocates who have a lot of knowledge about those systems and how to navigate them, what it will look like, what it will feel like, what sorts of questions are they going to ask you, what sorts of things can you ask for from that system, right? So folks who are maybe really nervous to get an STI exam and to pregnancy test, right? I think it's a really scary result, especially if you haven't disclosed to anyone else that you've experienced something violent. Really, really scary. And so having an advocate come with you can be really, really empowering. And that advocate can also ask for things like a blanket if you're feeling cold but also still really shy, right? Also, we do other forms of system advocacy. So folks who are interested in Title IX or the legal proceeding, we can talk about this is what an order of protection does, this is what an order of protection doesn't do. Does that fit within your specific situation? Does that fit within your specific goal? So often I think a lot of different agencies and a lot of different systems, including Title IX, really push people into certain kind of avenues of quote unquote healing and justice. And that's not something we're really here to do. We're here to help people identify what their goals are and then help them get to those goals. So someone might be in an abusive relationship, and they might actually feel like, I want to stay in this relationship, and I want to continue, but I want to increase my safety within this relationship, right? We're not people who are going to reject you because you refuse to break up with your intimate partner, right? We know that actually abusive relationships is very common to not feel like you want to leave or to take a long time to leave, right? Up to six times or more is actually really average. People try to leave relationships six times before they are actually fully able to exit that relationship, right? So we're really here to talk about what healing might look like, what survivorship might look like for you, and then get you to those goals. And right, if someone is like, I want to break up with my partner, then we start talking about safety planning. What are the steps to getting out of the house? What documents do you need? All of those sorts of things. So grad students was a population that I was really excited to talk to, because we know that grad students actually face a disproportionate and very high level of violence at the university level. So we hear things like, right, professors pushing boundaries and maybe even sexual harassment sometimes, and even even more escalated behavior. And we totally understand that sometimes that professor is the person who's going to sign off on this dissertation or whatever it may be. And it's actually a really big deal to come to Title IX and have like a big confrontation or to talk to this person about their behaviors and how they're inappropriate. That can be really, really scary for grad students. And we're really here to help folks navigate those systems and to try to safety plan in the ways that we can. Safety planning is always based in realism, and that's really kind of our whole thing. We want to make sure that people are feeling as safe as they can in that moment, and that's basically all we can do. So the way that most people come in contact with us is our 24/7 hotline. That 24/7 hotline is totally, again, confidential. You can say totally anonymous on that hotline. One of the first questions that we usually ask when we pick up the phone is, are you in a safe place to talk? We're never ever asking what's your name, where are you, those sorts of things. We're just asking, is it a safe place to talk? And then from there, you can kind of move forward. So that is how most people come in contact with us. And then, of course, we have to, you know, we have people outside of the hotline who can come meet you on campus or off campus if you want to chat more about your situation, your experiences. And then we can also help folks identify goals, those sorts of things. We also have support groups that we run, right? right, we have mothering through DD, we have support groups like college students who have experienced sexual or relationship violence on campus. And so often people also really light up for our support groups, right? And I think emotional safety is really, really important, and that's why support groups are so important. And so we run a number of services. We have a lot of different things, right? We have therapists who work for us. We have a legal, who work for us. We have like a bunch of different things. I'm an educator, so I don't really do much of the client services. I'm usually here to talk with folks and to do some sort of programming. So I do lots of programs on sexual and relationship violence, on what the difference even is between a healthy, unhealthy, and abusive relationship. I also do lots of conversations about what are the red flags of sexual assault and what might I do in a situation where I am at risk of sexual assault. And of course, those conversations definitely come with caveats that it is never one's fault for experiencing sexual assault. And yeah, so any questions from y'all? Cool. I think that's basically all I have to say to y'all. But I'm very excited to connect. I am going to leave just a couple of like cards and stuff from the agency. Feel free to email me or the agency. If you're looking for a specific program, I can definitely come chat with your group, chat about specific things. You know, if you're interested in like talking about those dynamics with professors, then let's talk about it. And of course, we have an on-campus advocate who really knows a lot about Title IX. So they would be a really great connector if you are someone who just like wants to talk about your safety on campus. They are a really great place to start. And their name is Tori and Nixon and Nixon today, but they are great and I love them. Yes, absolutely. We actually encounter many, many people who have never, you know, who are in our shelter, who have experienced relationship violence, but have never had their partner lay a hand on them. And emotional abuse is just as valid and as traumatizing as other forms of abuse. And so we're really here, you know, with physical assault or without physical assault. We really are here to take violence very seriously. And emotional abuse is definitely a really big part of abuse. And so, of course, from professors or people in power above you, it can be really, really hard to navigate that. And how do you even, like, start this conversation? What are the resources I can even talk to you about this? That's definitely a conversation we're willing to have.
Thank you so much. Yeah, any questions online? No? All right, well, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. All right, so we have one more presentation. We have Kate Supron joining us. She is Cornell's campus community liaison. She is from the Office of Community Relations. And she is here this evening to share Cornell's local economic snapshot with us. And with that, I will give you the floor, Kate.
Great. Thank you so much for having me with you today. I have a PowerPoint presentation that I can use. Our folks, I see, you know, some people are in the room. There's a screen that folks can see if I share it.
Yes.
And those on Zoom will be able to share. I also have sent it in advance if it's easier for you all to share, whatever works for you. Okay, so I'll share, right?
Yes, thank you.
Great, so thanks again for having me. As the introduction stated, I am Kate Supron. I work in Cornell's Office of Community Relations, which is on the administrative side of the university and in the Division of University Relations with a lot of the central communications. And I thought I'd just start off by, let's see, I can share my screen. Where did the PowerPoint go? And tell you a tiny bit about, let me get myself into the right view here. Oh, that's tricky. are you able to see my screen?
Yes.
Yes, you all are seeing my screen. Okay. And I'm trying to get myself into slideshow mode, but that isn't leaving me. Anyway, let me unshare for a second. Always glitchy. We'll put it into Okay, slideshow. Okay, now I'm going to, again, try to share my screen. Super. Slideshow. We're not, yeah, there we go. So again, Office of Community Relations, there are five of us. We are located in Day Hall. We are still working a hybrid schedule, but we do have someone in the office each day. We're each there 3 days a week. And you're welcome to reach out to us because we are happy to help folks across Cornell connect to the community, including our amazing graduate and professional student population. We do have a website that you can search out on cornell.edu. Here's a little screenshot of it. It has some tabs about events that we hold, community outreach sessions, boards we serve on, and a few links to community resources. Here is a quick view of, and I imagine this is probably small for some people, so I'm really sorry. I can put the link to this in chat. One of the things that we do as in community relations is serve on the boards and committees of a lot of wonderful local organizations. We don't have anyone on the board of the Advocacy Center who just presented to you all today, but I will include them as a wonderful community resource that I'm glad that you all know about now. So, and we do have a history of working with the Advocacy Center. Other sort of highlights, the United Way of Tompkins County the Tompkins County Area Transit Board, the Air Services Board, the Cooperative Extension Board, the Downtown Ithaca Alliance Board. So we're out there working with the myriad of nonprofits in our local community and making sure that we're trying to ensure as well that folks at Cornell know how to connect and the folks in the organizations as well. We have standing working groups with different municipalities. There are 16 municipalities in Tompkins County, and we have the core campus sits in three of those municipalities, the town of Ithaca and the village of Cheetah Heights. So we have working groups with each of those. We also have a working group with Tompkins County. We also organize a local leaders of color between Cornell administration and the local community. The chair is the co-chairs. One is Martha Pollack for Cornell, and then there's a community co-chair. We also have a working group with College Town and are very active in the College Town Neighborhood Council. We have a few outreach, a few outreach outlets that are available and accessible to you all if you ever feel that you have something you need to get out there, whether it's from the GPSA or just something in your own life or work here in Ithaca and at Cornell. We have a weekly radio show that is on called All Things Equal. That's on WHCU. We have, and that is on Tuesday mornings at 8:30, 15-minute, very friendly interview focused on diversity, equity, and inclusion. We have a newspaper column twice a month called East Hill Notes and Tompkins Weekly. And then another primary form of outreach for us are town halls and meetings with different municipalities and different organizations. Those can be anything from completely open to the public or just popping in at the beginning of a municipal board meeting for 5 minutes with some with Cornell administrators to answer questions that folks might have. Takes us to the snapshot. Each year, one of the things that I work on and produce is our local economic snapshot. I think it's really important for both the local community and for our students to understand how integral we are to each other, that we're one and the same. Half the residents of the city of Ithaca are students. And if you look at the numbers, 23% of the residents of the county are Cornell students. So you add Ithaca College on top of that. So we have a huge economic impact. 25,000 students, 10,000 employees, $1 billion payroll. A couple of the numbers. Can someone tell me? Can you see any of this? Are people able to see this? or is this just like teeny tiny print that you can't see? Okay. Anna says she can see it, but she is online. Can the folks in the room see this okay?
Can you guys see that?
Okay, great. Student spending is a huge part of the local economy. This is where, student spending is where the property taxes paid by students through their rents are in this bucket. So as you all know, some very large percentage, I think 95% of the graduate and professional students live off campus and 52% of the undergraduates. So they are in private housing and paying for services through their property taxes. So that has a very large impact, and for schools and for all of these things. The number that really stands out to me this year on the economic snapshot for 2021, which is based on the fiscal year, not the calendar year, so it's the year that ended June 30th of 2021, is visitor spending. We had seen a drop in fiscal year 20 with the start of the pandemic. Even with just that one quarter of the fiscal year being during the pandemic, we had a 40% drop over 2019. So it was already, this is from a very reduced, an already reduced starting point. From fiscal year 20 to fiscal year 21, visitor spending dropped 99%. So, and this is not all visitor spending in the county, this is the visitor spending generated by folks coming to Cornell for conferences, to visit the university, to see if they're going to go here, for sports camps, for sporting events, athletic events. So it's been a huge dive for the local economy. There are a lot of ways that Cornell contributes to the local economy. One is purchasing for the stuff we need on campus, construction of our new buildings. We work hard to purchase from vendors in Tompkins and surrounding counties, as well as we work with local construction companies. So the $152 million is construction spending in Tompkins and in adjacent counties. I'm sure folks have heard the business about property taxes. We do pay some property taxes. They are in the property tax bucket, but I skipped over local contributions to government, the Ithaca City School District, nonprofits, and to public transportation. Cornell has a negotiated MOU, a Memorandum of Understanding, with the City of Ithaca that's currently about $1.5 million a year, with half of that designated for fire service. We also make a voluntary payment to the City of the Ithaca City School District, to other nonprofits, and we are a big partner in public transportation because TCAT is a joint equal partnership between Tompkins County, the City of Ithaca, and Cornell, all three of whom used to have their own bus systems. Property taxes, Cornell does pay property taxes, but not on anything that is used in our primary educational mission. But even with most of Cornell's properties in assessed value off the tax rolls, Cornell is now the third largest taxpayer in Tompkins County. The top two are NYSEG and Dominion Energy, which is the power plant that's up the lake. We used to be, fifth or sixth on the list. Some of the rise has been because of the change in the way that Cornell does things, including Maplewood. When it was redeveloped, it was done on a land lease, which put it on the tax rolls, whereas the former Maplewood was owned and operated by Cornell, so that was off the tax rolls. Maplewood, that property, I believe, generates between the town of Ithaca, the Tompkins County, and the Ithaca City School District generates $1 million in taxes a year. But the other thing that's happened is that parts of the local economy have tanked. The mall used to be one of the big, one of our largest taxpayers, and it is not of us on the list anymore. We also pay municipalities for fees for service, such as water, stormwater, sewer, as well as permits for building projects and construction and other things that we have to do. A chunk of the money that comes in for research funding is spent locally. And then the last two items on the list are the venture capital raised and jobs created by two of the three main startup incubators at Cornell, by Rev and by the McGovern Family Center for Venture Development. Praxis brings in a lot of money and creates a lot of jobs, but they do not track their data in a way that we can, they can sift it out to either, even the New York State level. So we don't have them in there. This one-page snapshot is in its seventh year. One thing that makes it really great is that it is easy to read. Prior to 2015, when the first snapshot came out, there was a book that was put out that was very comprehensive and much more detailed. It looked at economic impact rather than just the raw numbers, so planners were running those numbers too and being able to really tell the true story of what $158 million in construction spending looks like in terms of the impact it has on the local economy. But we have made it very simple, very short, one page. It is used by a lot of stakeholders at Cornell, particularly our offices in Albany and D.C., by the Center for Regional and Economic Advancement. We like to try to get it out there to folks at Cornell through the assemblies. It was presented at ComNet to all the communication leads from the academic and non-academic units around campus. It got presented to the University Relations Committee of the Board of Trustees. So it's a good storytelling tool that people will have. We have a much greater likelihood of people reading. We have external stakeholders in the local economy, with the Chamber of Commerce and local businesses, nonprofits, municipalities, and it goes out to a lot of, viewed by a lot of other college towns. Another piece that is really terrific about it is that the data is pretty fresh. 6 months seems like a long time to get it together, but we wait for the data from the incubators so that we have that, because theirs is on the fiscal year. And it does take a little bit of time for it to settle, but prior to the one-page snapshot, we had the data was often 2 or 3 years old by the time the report got written and shared publicly. I think I've covered these already, but it's annual, well-circulated, straightforward, has some really great data points in a variety of sectors, and folks really look forward to receiving it. And I would be happy to take any questions. I can also, if it is helpful, go back to the snapshot itself in case folks have questions about that.
Kate, thank you so much. Does anybody have any questions for Kate? Any questions online? Oh, yeah, Josh, go ahead.
Yeah, you mentioned Maplewood. You mentioned that it's not owned by Cornell anymore, or?
It is. Many Cornell properties, like Maplewood, we own the land on which it sits, and we contracted with a private developer to build and operate that facility. So it is now on a Cornell land lease. That means it's not part of Cornell's on-campus housing portfolio, and it puts it on the tax rolls. So that is distinct from how it was before, and also it's a big difference there are many differences, I know, between Hasbrook and Maplewood, but Hasbrook is owned and operated by the university. So if you live in Hasbrook, you have a university housing contract, and that property does not contribute to the tax rolls. So yes, Maplewood is, and there are other Cornell buildings that meet that model. The Brezano Center in College Town is one of them that was built privately and on a land lease. So again, that puts it on the tax rolls. Oops, randomly moving through my slideshow. I hope that answers your question.
Yep. Okay, any more questions?
Yep. Well, should anything come to you in the future, you are always welcome to reach out to me directly. I will put my email in the chat, as well as link to the snapshot as a PDF and as a on the Cornell.edu page. I'm happy to work with the GTSA anytime, and with any of you individually, both in academic pursuits, if you're looking for information in the local community or trying to figure out who to talk to, or on a personal level. So, oh, and I neglected to mention, I also am an Assemblies representative. I serve on the as the representative for university relations to the employee assembly. So I think it's a great structure, and I thank all of you for the time and effort that you put into it. And I will stop my screen, pop some things in the chat, and you all can move along with your meeting. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Kate.
Yep.
Okay, so I believe, we have, I know Kyle is, Kyle texted me, should we join late? So we will hit our quorum, but I have one late addition to the agenda. Neve and I have written resolution 16, which is, we will explain, I will send it out for the breakout room survey. You can kind of go over that. We have that, and as well as we have the sustainable waste receptacle resolution, and then resolution 10 for the VP of finance. So with that, we will move out to the breakout rooms. We'll do 15 minutes like usual, and just be ready with some questions and thoughts about the resolutions we're going to be talking about today. Any questions before that? No? Okay. So we will reconvene. I think once everybody gets kind of in and settled in the breakout rooms, 15 minutes from then. So we'll do, we'll reconvene at 6:25. Okay, so we will, we can move on to business of the day, which we have an election for the Student Advocacy Committee Chair. I don't know why I always butcher that. So is anybody interested in serving that? I mean, there's only a couple weeks left, but it's a vacancy that somebody could fill, technically.
You have to do anything?
I mean, yeah. So no nominations? Okay, all right, no worries. It'll be filled in like 2 weeks, so. Okay, so we move on to resolution 15. So I will give the floor to Josh and Ian if they want to kind of give us an update on that or give us kind of a run through before we do any voting.
Yeah, so basically, since our last meeting, there were some changes to the resolution. So basically, the kernel, like the structure, waste and acceptable structure needs to be possibly updated. There, from our last meeting, committee meeting, it was discussed or mentioned that basically there should be a working group that's been formed and being charged certain things to look into.
Hey everybody, excited to be back. For those of you who missed my presentation a couple of weeks ago, or just might need a quick refresher, I'll just do a quick bullet by bullet. You know, essentially when we started this project in the Infrastructure, Technology, and the Environment Committee, we thought that Cornell's waste receptacle and waste management system could be improved. One of the biggest issues is that right now, Cornell Grounds does not have an accurate map of where all their waste receptacles are. The proposal that's articulated in this resolution calls for discovery of all those locations and actually establishing a map, but then also replacing the existing waste receptacles with smart waste receptacles. The advantage of this is that rather than having to make weekly rounds, facilities management will only need to pick up trash when these receptacles are full. This allows Cornell to reduce its fuel and labor costs, which in turn will allow Cornell to reduce its carbon footprint. And in the process, by mapping and locating these receptacles based on the data generated through the smart network, increases convenience for students, staff, and faculty at Cornell. So as Josh mentioned, there have been a couple of updates to the resolution when it was last presented here. What the updates essentially do is actually articulate the framework for how this will proceed. What it specifically calls for is the formation of a working group composed of several different stakeholders at Cornell, including grounds, facilities management, financial people, and representatives from the assemblies. This working group will be charged with mapping the location of existing waste receptacles and also conducting a cost-benefit analysis, both in terms of the projected differential in fuel and labor, as well as the projected differential in carbon emissions through implementation of this proposal. Assuming, as I believe, that the results from that study show net savings in both categories for Cornell, it calls for the university to then adopt the proposal. Any questions?
Okay, so before we get moving on this, let's do one more roll call just so we have official numbers on whether or not we hit quorum.
Abir El Samari. Chris Franklin. Samuel Braxani. Kate Carter Cram.
Here.
Charles Day. Jordan Dotzel. Cody Duell. Ruth Epstein.
Here.
Natalie Gonzalez. Sabrina Graham.
Here.
Bridget Hayes. Amar Nayatali. Kyle Carnuda.
Here.
Jake Alexandra Piasova.
Here.
Genesis Lee.
Here.
Stephanie Lopez. Amelia Matthews.
Here.
Harshad Mehta. Morena Minnelli.
Here.
Neve Moore.
Here.
Andrew Murtha.
Here.
Chris O'Connor.
Here.
Christine Oanewa. Akash Patel.
Here.
Noriella Perez. Damian Sharp.
Here.
Georgia Smith. Jack Timmons.
Here. Sorry, this is Georgia Smith. Here.
Jack Timmons. William Lane. Josh Washington, Anna Wunsch,
here.
And Simon Yang.
Here.
We have 17 out of 32 seated votes.
Perfect. Okay, good. All right, so if there's no more questions for Ian, I would entertain a motion to call the question on Resolution 15.
Could I ask a very quick question? Sorry, this is
Jennifer. Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I just, one of the things that we were discussing was, would there be a sort of evaluation post-installation of the new sort of system?
Thanks for the question, Georgia. Yes, there will be a continuous evaluation. One of the advantages of the contemplated smart waste receptacles is that they allow gathering of data that the university currently doesn't have. If you imagine sort of a Google Maps overlay dashboard, you'll see all the locations of all the waste receptacles, and it will display the level of how full it is, what its battery life is like, and then, you know, Cornell will also be able to evaluate over the long term the changes in fuel and labor savings rates.
So is there like a sort of yearly report type of thing in mind? I just wanted to ask.
So the resolution does not specifically call for a continuing yearly report to be made, but I would imagine that grounds and facilities management does generate some type of report, whether it be monthly, biannually, or annually, about the status of their operations.
Okay. Okay, got it. Thank you.
Any more questions? Okay, so looking for a motion to call the question. Second? Okay, all right. So, again, this is for the voting members. All those in favor, yes on Zoom, raise your placards in the room. Okay, those opposed? Okay, hold on. I'm confused. Okay. All right, so let's redo this again. So, yes on Zoom. If you're for the resolution, we'll do this again, and then placards in person. We'll give them an opportunity. Okay.
You had 16
votes. Okay. All right. And those opposed... and abstentions. Okay. So looks like the resolution passes. And with that, I will hand it over to Damien for resolution 10.
We discussed in our last meeting passing or reviewing resolution 10. I don't think we had a physical copy for you all at the last meeting, but you got one before your breakout rooms today. Again, this is just to establish the appropriations committee chairperson as the vice president of finance and give that person a seat on the executive committee. We would need 2/3 to vote to pass this, so I don't believe we can pass it today. But I will again take any questions we might have on this resolution.
Okay. All right, so we'll table that for next time. So we'll move on to resolution 16. So this has kind of been something that's been in the works, I think, since the beginning of the year, since I took over. We have a very large reserve fund. At the end of every year, the money that isn't used by the GPSA is just automatically transferred over to a reserve account. And as you can imagine, with the lack of activities with COVID and things like that, there was a lot left over from the last several years. I haven't been able to narrow down an exact number. We have like a quarterly report. What do you know? What report that was that you sent me today? What quarter that was from? Okay, so there's some conflicting reports, but according to Gina's latest report from quarter two of this year, there's over $90,000 in the reserve account. So that's a pretty good chunk of money, and the fact that it's like, you know, student money, and you know, we should be able to use it for different initiatives or whatever. And so that's kind of what this resolution aims to do, because as of right now, the GPSA bylaws lacks a mechanism for us to draw down that money. And we kind of thought it would be a good idea to make it a nice, like, diplomatic and smooth process. So if you guys read the resolution, basically we just want to make it to where any GPSA voting member or field representative can kind of propose a resolution to use the funds, and then there's some different things with that as far as who votes and how much can be drawn. So we proposed a limit of $3,000 for I kind of see it as like a tiered system. So if it's anything under $3,000, then all voting, like present voting members and field representatives would vote on it, which is a little bit different than kind of how we normally do things, where only voting members are usually the ones voting outside of when we do elections. The thought behind this is basically that, you know, it's their money too, right? And, you know, we're all here together and serving the constituency, and you know, it would be nice for everybody to kind of weigh in and be able to vote on what this money is used for. So, you know, once it goes past $3,000, then it would require a two-thirds majority vote of both those field representatives and voting members, and then those resolutions can only be passed when the reserves are 10% of the annual funding received, just so, you know, we can kind of keep a nice chunk of change in there for emergencies and whatnot, based off of, you know, maybe overdrawing the GPSA budget or just different things like that. You never know when you might need that kind of money. So I guess this is kind of open to different thoughts and questions that you guys might have about this resolution. Any suggestions? Yeah, go ahead, Josh.
So a couple of things. The first thing, who would be in charge of, like, I guess, monitoring and tracking, like, this reserve? And then the second question is, how would people know about this extra money? Like, would it be more efficient or quicker?
Yeah, and that's a good question. I think that kind of falls, you know, to the appropriations chair. You know, it's part of the internal budget, and that's, you know, needs to have to make sure that that's maintained. And I kind of just see this mostly as like a special circumstance, right? I don't think we should completely drain the reserve this year or even next year, but the fact that there's like that's almost more than what we get in the yearly allocation for the GPSA. So it's kind of a lot of money just to be sitting there, especially when it's money that the students gave us, right? So if we can find creative ways to give back to the students, that'd be great. And this would give us the ability to do that. Any other questions or thoughts on this?
Just something super nitpicky, but at the very end of the resolution where it says be finally resolved, resolutions can only be passed when reserves are 10% of the annual funding received. Can we just change that to at least 10% just for clarity?
Yeah, sure, we can do that. So then, like our usual charter changes, we need a two-thirds majority to be able to vote on it.
Should it be also mentioned that the finance person would look at this, or would that need to be mentioned in the resolution?
So it makes sense where it's at. So like if you look at the bylaws, we're putting this under the section that has to do with, like, the internal budget. So like, so this is point E. So point E through D is basically like saying, like, the appropriations chair, like, does this, they're in charge of the internal budget. And so things like, so this is just kind of like a asterisk at the bottom that's like, hey, if there's this extra money, we can do that. Anybody have anything else for this? I think so, but I'm not sure if that's ours, right? I think that the university manages that, right? I'm not sure, but that's a good question. I'm not sure.
I'm just curious, you know, in general, could we think about if a lot of money does pile up and we don't have, no one has an idea of how to spend it, is there a way we could channel that into something worthwhile automatically?
Yeah, I mean, no, that could work, but I think our thought process was like you would put forth a resolution to do that. So that way, you know, if the GPSA next year, the year after, they want, there's like something that comes up or something that they want to do with that, then they can do that. Yeah. Any other questions? Okay. So we can table that for next time. And let me get my agenda back up here. Okay. So we'll move on to reports from the officers and committees. Damien?
Can I?
Yeah, you can go first. Yeah, sure.
Class. Anyways, we just sent out the mid-release for the programming chairs, by the programming chairs to request. So, like, if you haven't gotten the tickets yet, please go get it for the spring gala. That's my only announcement.
Thank you. Damien, do you have an update?
My only update is just, you know, we have one more meeting left. I sent out an email earlier today. You know, please try to encourage our peers to be at the next meeting so that we can pass these last couple of resolutions that would require a larger number of people. So that's my only update.
Okay.
Really no updates. I mean, operations, staffing, everything is getting, like, overhauled this year, as it does every year. But if you have any nominations, they're due at the end of today. So if you want a last minute to submit your name, get it in.
Andrew?
No updates.
Okay, I think that that's everybody. Jan, do you have an update for us?
Are you talking to me?
Yes.
We encourage you all to look at Monday announcements, and so I'm not going to fill the thunder of Monday announcements, but I'll answer any questions you have. Otherwise, I'll yield my time.
Okay. Thank you, Jan. So with that, we can move into open forum. There is one thing that I want to talk about in open forum before we get started, and that's the elections. So, per the charter and the bylaws, the executive committee is by default the elections committee, which is very interesting. So, the last couple of weeks we've been kind of doing a deep dive into the charter and those election rules, and we found that our elections are run very differently from the other assemblies, and our body is elected by the current body and not by the constituency like the other assemblies are. So I don't know how you guys feel about that, but I don't feel like that's very diplomatic. So there's been a little bit of an internal effort within the elections committee to fix that. And so I guess I can kind of give you a rundown of what we thought we might be able to do, and we might be able to maybe vote on some changes next week. But basically, I think that we should kind of try to run parallel with the other assemblies, and we've already kind of moved towards that. You know, we're accepting nominations until the end of the day, but then what we had hoped was to be able to send out an elections email to all the graduate professional students, and then with what the data the Office of the Assemblies has, so how the other assemblies do it, is that if you log into the system that they use to vote, it's able to tell, oh, Damien is in the policy school, so he's going to be getting these candidates. So they're able to differentiate who gets what candidates. So how that would work is you log in and you're a physical sciences graduate student. So then you would be able to vote on who the next physical science voting members were, but then you would also get the general ballot for the committee chairs and then the executive committee. And so that just, I feel like that, to me, is, you know, a no-brainer on how our election should be, and I feel like it's kind of weird to be able to have the current people elect the next group. I don't know, I don't feel like that's very very equitable system, and not very democratic, especially if we're supposed to be, you know, representing the larger university community. But I'm open to any, like, thoughts and suggestions on that. It would just have to be a charter change that we would vote on in the next meeting so that we can get everything squared away by the end of the semester. But any thoughts about that? Any suggestions? Yeah.
I have a general question. To vote on the charter, we need 2/3 voting members. Okay. I think, like, the problem repeats itself because we need 2/3 to vote on the resolutions, and then we can't even change the way we vote.
Yeah, no. So, okay, so this is the problem that we've been having, and again, I've been doing this for a while, and every time I read the charter and the bylaws, I notice something different. So, there is a clause in the bylaws that says that the executive, so there's two things for this. So the executive committee, there's attendance rules for the GPSA. If you have two unexcused absences within a semester, we could all vote them out. I'm not saying that we do that, but there is another part of that where the executive committee can unseat a member, and that doesn't count against the two, then it removes them from the two-thirds vote. It doesn't remove them as a GPSA member, it just kind of like inactivates them. So it's like a two-tier system. So the executive committee would unseat a member, but then the assembly would remove the member. I'm not saying that we should remove people, but if there's, you know, people who haven't attended a meeting at all this semester, that's kind of, we're trying to get some things done, and it's difficult when people aren't showing up. So the executive committee could unseat them, and then they wouldn't count against. So there's some different ways to do it, and it just depends on how we want. Yeah, go ahead.
Did they say that notice has to be given to the people who are going to be unseated? Because you just basically send an email saying you're going to be unseated if you come to the next meeting, and if, you know, they...
That's a good question. I don't remember seeing that, but I can... I mean, that's definitely worth looking at. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah, sorry. Okay. All right. I mean, I just want to make sure that everyone's on the same page. Sure. Yeah. So how it works, and I urge you all to kind of look in. I think it's in the bylaws or in the chart. I'm not sure. But it's a section on attendance, and it says, you know, you get so many excused absences, and if you don't, the executive committee with a 2/3 vote. So there's only four of us. So we only need three of us to unseat. See, I don't know. I don't know what the difference between unseat and removal is, right? So, and I did some Googling in Robert's rules and whatnot, and there isn't anything that says there's a difference. But I kind of interpret it as like, you know, they're inactive members, and then at some point maybe they could be, I don't know if they can be reactivated or what, but we're not completely removing them from the organization like you would, because we need 2/3 to remove somebody. Again, we're hitting this same roadblock, and that's kind of like why with Resolution 16, you'll see, like, I put present voting members and field representatives, because, I mean, I feel like I understand that things shouldn't be able to be voted on so quickly like that, but it's tough when, you know, there's members who haven't been in attendance. So, yeah, any more questions or thoughts?
Is it possible to get a report on who's showing up?
So that's we're working with Pharrell to figure out, looking at the different roll calls, to figure out who those members would be that we unseat, and then to be able to come to the next meeting, because we have a lot to do in the next meeting, especially if you guys are, you know, on board with overhauling the election system, because that's a huge undertaking. So yeah, any other thought? Any specific thoughts on the elections? Yeah. Yeah. No, and that's something we looked at too, because you can only suspend the bylaws. You can't suspend the charter. And the charter is what has the 2/3 majority. Yeah, right? So we've exhausted pretty much all options at this point, and we're just now stumbling upon this other option. Yeah.
I feel like it might be effective to just send the members who haven't turned up an email saying we're going to bring it to a vote, because they won't necessarily know that we won't have required votes unless they read the transcript.
Yeah.
You know, so I can see them and remove them. So it might just be like an effective enough like tool to get them to just come next meeting.
Yeah, that's the idea too. And we also have a special meeting in our back pocket too, if we need to use it at the end of the semester. I mean, it's final time, and I can't imagine we want to do that. But again, like, if we don't get things done as far as elections and our different resolutions that we wanted to, we also have that option. But any thoughts on the elections? Yeah, Ruth.
I really like the idea. So next meeting when we vote, if people are in favor of it,
yes.
Pass it, and then it would go to everyone online.
Yeah.
And then we would know by the end of the semester.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we wouldn't have to have another meeting.
Well, so we have pretty much, technically, yeah, you could do that, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's a good idea. Any other questions about the election? So another thing too, with if we're moving forward on this idea of overhauling the election, is we've kind of found a loophole as far as, you know, when you propose these charter amendments, you have to wait a meeting before you can vote on it. So we talked with Gina, and basically all the charter says is that you have to present the resolution and then wait to. So we kind of interpreted it as that, like, once we kind of figure out the details, I could send you all an email, and that would be presenting the resolution. And so then in the next GPSA meeting, we would be able to vote on it. So I'm not sure how you guys feel about that interpretation. But again, like, some certain aspects, you know, when we need this two-thirds majority has kind of been binding us so far on a lot of these resolutions that we need. Any thoughts on that?
I would just say that it'd be nice to have the resolution, but also kind of the blur that the person who's presenting it would have given if we were here, like what it actually means.
Yeah, I was going to record a video. I don't know. It's kind of silly, but I think it would work to be able to, and plus, you know, you would be able to email me with any questions that you have and whatnot. But, you know, this is crunch time, and I think that, you know, that's going to be a super important change that, you know, that we can make for that. Any other questions, thoughts, concerns? And not just about this, but anything else?
Yeah. You have to be a voting member to nominate.
No.
I'll do it.
Okay.
Do we not have a form now?
No, we don't. So next time you can do it for 2 weeks, yes. Okay. Anything else? Anybody?
Do you know what sort of
That's a great question. I do not know that. That would be a Gina question.
Really low for the guys.
Yeah, you know, but I think that we've had, you know, with sending out emails to everybody and different programming stuff and having that out there, I think we've definitely increased engagement as far as where it was last year. But we have some nominations for people ready to go. So, all right. So with that, I would entertain a motion to end the meeting, if anybody. Okay, all right. Okay, all right. We'll see you guys next time. Look for that email with the presentation for the elections resolution, I guess. And let me know if you guys have any questions about that.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.